Yeah, from, I mean, from the industry standpoint, like having a 5-year plan is just, it's a little silly. I mean, these networks that we've spent most of our careers on, we're just getting started when we started our careers. So who knows what's going to be in this space 5 years from now.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here with Leyde and Becca of Helen and Gertrude. What's up, guys? How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Doing Hello. Good. I'm excited to have you gals here. Helen and Gertrude, I want to pass it over to you. I know you guys are award-winning in like social media and branding and marketing. What exactly is Helen and Gertrude?
Yeah, so Helen and Gertrude is, we're a digital marketing agency at our core, but we're women-owned, just something we're really proud of. And we really specialize in the worlds of creative media and data coming together. So my background is in creative, and then Leyde is my better half in the data world.
Let's talk about that. So a lot of people are going to be watching the video. Other people will be listening at home. So let's walk through, maybe just each of you can walk through your backstory and some of your strengths there. And of course, introduce yourself so the listener can kind of put a name to the voice.
Yeah. So Becca Post. So I'm the CEO at H&G. But my background didn't start in business, didn't start in operations, where that is really what I'm focused on today. I handle a lot of the internal workings of the business, while Leyde handles a lot of the external. So my background is I went to RIT for new media design, fell in love with motion graphics, interaction design, then joined a startup also local to Rochester, Brand Networks, which grew to 250 people at its largest, working for brands like Walmart and Target, and really building out their creative team before we ultimately became Helen and Gertrude.
Yeah. And I'm the polar opposite of Becca and yet the same person at the same time. So I came to Rochester in 2010 and working for Xerox. So I started there as an analyst. My background is I have a Bachelor of Commerce in Marketing and International Business from McGill University in Montreal. So I had no intention of coming back here, but I landed here because of Xerox. And then from there, I joined Brand Networks a few years later as a senior data analyst. So I started working through a lot of the testing and the analytics side, and eventually our paths crossed. And really, that's how we came together.
Yeah, we actually, we climbed Kilimanjaro together. So that's how you know we really like each other.
Yeah, we really, really like each other.
Yes, I love, and you mentioned you guys are polar opposites, but the same. Why do you say that? Where are you opposites and where do you guys meet right at the middle?
Yeah, I would say we have a very united view in how we manage the business. We agree in all of the fundamentals, but in terms of the work that we do, for example, Becca is very focused on the culture, the internal workings of the company, whereas for me, it's more of a client side. So my job is the revenue, the sales, the client retention, client services. So it works really, really well in the dynamics of what it is that we do with H&G.
Yeah, it's a nice pairing where we can lean on each other for the sides that maybe we either don't enjoy as much or we're just not as good as the other person is.
That is important to have team members, that it's the yin and the yang, right? And I've never actually been in your culture, but just looking at your website, and everyone just seems happy and fun and like excited to work there. Talk a little bit about how that kind of bleeds into your company culture and just how you service your team members at Helen and Gertrude.
Yeah. So our culture is something that we have focused on since day one. I'm glad that you can see everyone looks happy. we really truly stand behind that. So something I've always said is I set out with Helen and Gertrude to be the company I always wanted to work for. And it's going back to these principles that I have learned along the way as an interaction designer around human-centered design. So one of my passions has always been how do we use human-centered design in every aspect of our lives beyond just, you know, designing an app or a website. So I kind of take that thinking into how we're structuring our business as well. So if you think about it, like, the human experience at a company is so valuable, but we also take that to the client experience. So they're humans on the other end and they're advertising to humans. So we really think about this notion as human-centered being core to everything that we do in our business.
Yeah. You guys are humans, your teammates are humans, your clients are humans. Yeah. It's funny because I do like analytics as well, but there needs to be that balance, right? Between the analytics and humanity. How do you maintain that balance, or do you want to expand on that?
Yeah. So from my regard is the way that we think about data, it is so important to our business. And we just think about it as another component to understanding each other as humans. So that is really what the data is. It's information about the other human. So, you know, data has become kind of a dirty word these days. So we really try to take it from an empathetic view, and that's how we infuse it into the work that we do.
Yeah. And I'll say too, in the nature of our business, so when you think about marketing, it's really all about identifying a need. So it's always asking the why, and then we figure out the how. So the data is a tool to get you to that point. Very similar in terms of our employees and our labor force, et cetera, because we're really truly trying to understand what do they need to be successful, because in return, that's how we get the most successful output. So that's how everything comes together in the nature of just the industry that we work in and everything we do.
I love it. And you guys are big shots in the Rochester area. It's funny because I've had a few marketing professionals on the show, and people ask, Ben, you have a marketing company. These aren't potential clients per se. If anything, they're competition. I'm like, I don't really see competition because I have so much I can learn from the two of you. And you're operating in completely different industries with different styles of business than me. So there's so much we could learn from each other and maybe partner. And my mind was blown because I'm on your website and I see like Wegmans and Jergens and Franzia, which I love Franzia. Be honest, I love Franzia. And these are some big brands you've worked with. It's true. You've worked with these brands.
It's true.
Coming out of Rochester, it makes me feel so proud of our home here. I had no clue.
Yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead. I was going to say, yeah. So that was one of the things too, that we love about what we do is that we can bring these big names to Rochester and give people here in Rochester that same experience in their careers. You know, when I was in school, I was always told I had to go to New York City. I had to go to San Francisco if I ever wanted to work with big brands, right? But that's not necessarily true. Those opportunities are here in Rochester as well.
Yeah. And Rochester is a fantastic market. With the RIT grads, the U of R grads that are coming out are really, really good talent that we're able to poach. And then we're also bringing a lot of people back to Rochester, which is pretty neat because we, like we said, we're by the farmers market, but we're also dealing with celebrities in LA. So it's a pretty uncommon, but quite normal for us to be able to have the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Keeping people in Rochester, allowing them to move to Rochester. You said, I'm like flustered. You said celebrities in LA though.
Yeah. I mean, we've worked quite a bit in terms of product sponsorships. We've done, you know, the celebrity shoots, we've done the big shoots in New York. So really working at the same scale as agencies in big cities would. It's just more, we travel out there rather than we're already there, or we even bring things here and sometimes shoot things here, which is a lot more effective and cost effective for some of these companies.
100%. Well, what are some of these other companies or brands that I didn't shout out that maybe the listener at home knows about?
Yeah. So, I mean, locally, we've done some work for Wegmans, Cooper Vision, some more local businesses. JCC did some fantastic partnerships with Josh over there. And the national scale Cow, which is Biore, Jergens Curel, that umbrella has been a partner with us for over a decade. The wine group, like we mentioned, there's multiple other ones. So we're quite big within the wine and spirit space. There's a big med tech vertical that we specialize in. And then there's more of that beauty and skincare side that we've really grown an empire at this time.
And by now we're just name dropping huge brands. What you can give the brand or not, it's up to you, but what does the process look like? So how are you servicing these clients? What does the day-to-day look like potentially? And then obviously, what does the final product look like? Well, what are you doing for these big brands?
Yeah, it really varies from brand to brand. So depending on where they are, some of these brands come to us and say, we have traditional brand guidelines. We have no idea what we're doing on social. Help us translate them. Others, we're doing, you know, big library production shoots. So we're creating a lot of content for them on digital. And we've even started from, you know, a startup who needs, you know, a mission and a mantra and a naming exercise. So it's really anything from start to finish of creating the brand and establishing it all the way through running your media, moderating on that. So that customer service piece with it through digital, it's all really important. And every brand is kind of at a different point in their journey and what they need. So it really varies.
So I'm just nerding out on my end. I'm curious what that actually looks like. So I imagine there's a ton of discovery. This is really big brands and really important products that are going to help a lot of people and make so many people smile. I'd be afraid to screw up. So what are some of the processes you guys have in place to ensure that you can, you know, deliver that top-notch service?
Yeah, I mean, well, one, top-notch talent, but two, it's really, like I said, going back to really understanding the problem and the hypothesis that you're trying to solve. So we do a lot of consumer research. We'll look at social listening, for example. We'll look at historical data to really help us come up with our strategy of what it is that we're doing. Then we'll work with the client to make sure that we have alignment in terms of how we're bringing it to life. We'll do pre-production documents, walk them through everything, get agreement. Once we go into production, making sure that we're, you know, we're casting the right models, the right representation, then it's matching all of our research. And then at the end of the day, really pairing that with the media strategy. So I would say when you say be afraid to screw it up, I think it's really more of an experimentation and a test and learn in the digital space at all times. So it's having the nimbleness to be able to get a strategy out there and really look at your KPIs and how they're performing. Because from there, you can adjust, you can learn, you can grow. So there's no such thing as perfection. It's really more, what am I comparing it to? How am I doing compared to the different benchmarks that you're putting out there?
Yeah, and in our space, it changes every day. So you have to be a little bit fearless and try some things out, like go make a TikTok and see how it performs and, you know, tweak things along the way.
Be fearless. I hear not just don't be afraid to screw up, but be willing to screw up, but almost redefine. It's not screwing up. It's just data. So you can better understand the KPIs of what's going to work. Have you guys dived into TikTok? I literally just started TikTok. Like by the time this comes out, it'll be like 3 months, but I literally just started like a not very long ago. And I put up a TikTok and I got like 2 views, and then I put up one and I got like 20, and then I put up one and I got like 56,000, and then I put up one and I got like 100. So I'm like, I don't know what I did right, what I'm doing wrong. Have you dived into the TikTok world much at all, or what are some other ways you're experimenting these days, if not?
Yeah, I mean, from a client standpoint, yes, we're partnering with creators, we're running ads, we're doing organic content, so all over the place. From a personal level, I've just spent too many hours watching, but if it does help, pro tip, you're supposed to post daily and just do a ton of volume because they don't even know what hits and doesn't. So your stats make sense.
Yeah. And it's really exciting too, being in the social media space since, you know, essentially the start of advertising on social. So the early days of Facebook tab apps and likegating, to see new platforms come into the scene and kind of go through the same things that all these other big names went through, is no one knew what was going to work on Facebook or Instagram. It was all experimentation. And so that's still happening today. It's the same kind of mindset.
Yeah, always experimenting. And you just hinted you guys have been in the space since the dawn of a lot of this. So you've been marketing for a career. Tell me a little bit about the history and how long you've been doing it. And in addition to that, maybe some trends from exactly where you started, where you were when you started, and lead it up till today. I know we could probably have like a 10-part series on just that, but how long have you been in the industry and what changes have you seen?
Yeah, so I started at Brand Network straight out of college. So they were a social media focused ad tech company. And so we were just creating apps on Facebook, and then Twitter came along and we translated that to Twitter. But the really interesting thing that I have found is the early days of social content, the idea of that was to fit seamlessly in with your friends and your family. So a brand's content should fit in with, you know, your uncle's new baby announcement. And now it's kind of got really, really polished there for a while, especially with Instagram. And now with the TikTok coming in, it's going back to that kind of grittiness that was really fun in the early days of social. So as a brand too, it's fun to guide them of here's where you put your really high production quality content, and here's where you can just have a little fun with it and just play a little bit. And so it's nice to have both avenues for a brand now.
Yeah. And I would say from the tech side too, it's fascinating because in the early days you had access to everything. So you literally it was your playground. You can just imagine something you could build at, because it probably wasn't the greatest thing, but for instance, like you could track where people were going, what hotels they were staying on, and take all that data and build something with it. But obviously as more restrictions were happening, which it should, it was interesting because also from a tech side, these companies were focusing on the quality of their placements, how to best make these decisions. And so they started developing the algorithm in a way that it's really, really strong. So back in the day, you needed an expert to make sure they knew exactly how they were placing, where they were placing. Now they're doing a lot of the decisions. So it's become more of a relationship of tech plus care, because we're not going to be better in the algorithm, but it's understanding it and leveraging as best as we can. So the relationship with the platforms itself also has been a really interesting evolution as to how to maximize your results.
I love it. Yeah, it's. I remember back in the day, people would do weird stuff, like they would write text, but they would write it in white so you wouldn't be able to see it. And then they would create a link so it's a backlink, but it's hidden. And they would do all these like weird kind of scammy stuff that would allow you to rank on Google. But nowadays, these algorithms are so smart and complicated that kind of what you brought up, the authenticity and the realness is almost what the algorithm wants. So it's like we spend all this time trying to cheat the algorithm. Really, we need to stop cheating it and just give it what it wants, which seems like authenticity and content and engagement and communication. That's kind of what I'm seeing. I'm curious, you can expand on that, or I'm just curious as to what you guys are seeing, maybe the future of algorithms and technology, like where is this all going?
Yeah, I mean, in summary, what it does, it's able to predict behavior. And so it does it based on actions that are taking place within the platform. And that's like the Cliff Note version, not the very technical one.
Yes.
So what you want to do is you want to make sure that you provide the opportunity for it to be able to do the work. So do you have enough assets? Have they run long enough? Is your objective awareness? Because if so, you want to be very, very repetitive with what you're placing out there. So it's a frequency play. If you're driving e-commerce, you want a ton of pieces of content, because literally you're just like throwing spaghetti at a wall and seeing what sticks. So it's understanding that to be able to drive the best results. That is really what you need and what we do.
Yeah. And on the other side of that too, you have content creators, which the platforms are leaning more and more into and trying to support them better, because I think they have realized that they make a lot of money off of these people who are creating amazing content essentially for free. And so it's also making sure that as a brand, when you're choosing which creators to work with, that you're choosing ones that go back to that authenticity, that, you know, aren't just advertising every brand with every piece of content they make. So those are other ways to kind of play with the platforms in the way that they want you to.
Yeah.
I love that. And you got to continue to play with it. I'm wondering, is it is it a threat nowadays that everyone has, where's my phone, one of these phones, and can create content, and oftentimes at a really high scale with the editing systems on their phone and the quality of their camera. Is it a threat to what you guys do? I mean, you're dealing with large brands at a large scale, but anybody can pick up their phone and become an influencer just by creating content. Well, where do you come into play, and is that threatening your industry? What are your thoughts?
I think it's an opportunity. I mean, it's like I said, we change every day. So I think creators are actually a partnership, because there's different type of content that's being created. There's different roles that everything plays. And the goal is to just have that surround sound. So when you're doing an ad, it tends to vary quite a bit from what an influencer would do. So it's okay that they're around. I would say there's other challenging things like iOS 14. I would say that's a little bit more of a threat in terms of being able to measure your success and validate what you're doing. But no, influencers are our friends, and definitely something you want to consider as part of your strategy.
So let's see here. What are some other challenges that you guys are dealing with today? What are some challenges that you see every day where maybe you threw a lot at the wall, nothing sticked? Or what are just some of those challenges or pitfalls you see, and what have you learned from dealing with some of these challenges?
Yeah, I'll take it more from an operational side of things, because that's the world I live in. You know, the last 2 years, I would say, have been really hard on everyone. And so just from running a business perspective, the challenge has been to really make sure that we check in with ourselves and how we're doing, but also making sure that we can give the grace and space for our employees as well. I'm going to keep going back to that human element, but that's really what the last 2 years have forced us all to really accept, that we are human. We can't be superheroes all the time. So it's giving people a chance to slow down, really understand their own personal values, making sure that the business is clear with their values, and have a shared vision and how our values align with that. So that's a lot of what we've been facing. But it's all good stuff, and it's all going to make us a better business.
I want to kind of double down on that, Becca. So how do you and your team and your everyone, how do you guys check in with yourself? Do you have any strategies you follow, or how do I know that I should check in? How should I check in? Those kind of things.
Oh, there's so many tools out there. We went through the Conscious Leadership program, which I know you talked with Cheryl. So we actually use a lot of the tools that she's given our team in terms of creating values. So we went through that with all of the individuals within the company to really understand each other's values. And that's helped us check in with each other. So I know if, you know, I have a value that's wildly different than Leyde's, there are going to be aspects I need to check in with her that I normally wouldn't think about. So just getting kind of that playing field out and communicated has helped us check in with one another. We all really like each other as well, which really helps.
That helps.
So we care about each other. So we are just naturally kind of, you know, let's go for a walk. Let's do a one-on-one real quick. So that's been really helpful too, just to genuinely care about the people we work with.
Yeah. And I know, Leyde, you're a full-time mom and a full-time co-founder. So talk about, from your perspective, finding that balance, finding that blend. Obviously, motherhood is just as, if not far more important than your business. You tell me. Tell me about finding that blend and that balance between the two, and how you stay sane with all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced I'm sane, but I think it's paying a lot of attention to yourself, because you have a lot of responsibilities and a lot of people that depend on you at all times. So therefore you need to stop and say, what do I need to be okay? So, you know, I have my entourage, I have my chiropractor, my gym trainer, my therapist, you know, like my husband, who's a saint. So Becca, who's my work wife that puts up with me. So it's really more about just building that village that is helping you, and you're not alone, because at the end of the day, that's the example you're setting for everybody else. So now that, you know, we have more and more women having babies in our office, and they're really looking to figure out, whoa, how do I do this? It's not perfect, but you just need a support system, and you need to really check in with yourself. And that's the only way to stay afloat, because it's really harsh.
I couldn't say it any better myself. I love that you refer to them as your entourage. It makes it more fun. In addition to entourage, I often use the word mentorship, but I mean, sometimes you're mentoring, sometimes you're being mentored. I'm wondering where you guys learn this stuff from, because right now on a day-to-day basis, you're often in a mentorship role. You have a team you have to take care of. You have a lot of responsibility. Who do you look to for advice or mentorship or anything like that?
Yeah, so we've been very fortunate that the managers that we had at Brand Networks, one in particular, I don't know if he knows how often we talk about him on these interviews, but he really guided us each individually in different ways. For me, it was in my early days of my career, I thought creative director was really my path. I thought that was the only path I could do. I didn't see any other options. And he really helped me realize that I could go down this more business oriented path. I could do operational types of things. So, you know, he was teaching me how to do P&Ls when I was still a designer and I was like, Excel, what's that? And so that really kind of lit a fire in me that I didn't know existed. And then additionally, Mike Garson, who's now CEO at Brand Networks, he acts as our business advisor. I call him for advice all the time. I call him dad. So we're really fortunate that we have that network as well.
Yeah. And I would say the same mentor, I remember standing in a room learning pricing and thinking, oh my God, why are we charging so much? Because I knew nothing. And he literally made me repeat, you're worth it. You're worth it. You're worth it. And so now even when I'm pitching, I just think I'm worth it. I'm worth it. So he's been wonderful. And then the other thing that's been really helpful is when you first start a role and you start a new company, you think about all the things you don't know. And so what he did is he really helped me to reorient and think about the things you're good at and the things you know and the things you contribute. And if you really lean into those rather than focusing on all the things you don't know, that's really the key to becoming better at your role. And that's really what's led to a lot of my success. So really, really grateful to him and all the work he did with Becca and myself.
Yeah. And then you build your entourage to take care of all those things that you're not very good at.
Exactly. Like you're not alone.
I love this. There's a book, Who Not How. And it's all about finding the right who's in your life, the who's that can handle very specialized things that they oftentimes way better than you can. I mean, you can't be a specialist and perfect at everything. You guys are who's to one another, that you've got the yin and the yang, that you can ultimately take creative and analytical and bring them together, and finding those employees and people and entourage that can, as a team, come together. And that's how you basically change the world, right? It's not just, ooh, I'm smart, these are my ideas, do what I say. It's being open-minded to taking feedback from others and surrounding yourself by like-minded people, but people with other skill sets. It sounds like you guys are, so it's funny because I'm a one-man show. And I love talking about leadership and personal development. But at the end of the day, the number one person I lead is myself. And I have a couple freelancers, but no employees. And I feel like you guys are embodying a lot of what I'm learning and sometimes teaching, because I actually don't embody it because I'm so small. You guys actually have a team that embody these principles. How big is the staff at Helen and Gertrude? How large are you guys?
Yeah, we're at 27 people right now. And then we work with a handful of freelancers as well.
Love it. And I presume you're growing, or are you pretty much right in that perfect spot?
We're stable right now, but you never know what could happen. One of the things that we've kind of learned over the years is don't grow for growth's sake. So last year we had a very fast growing year, and it's really hard to sustain that momentum, to make sure that your culture is growing in a safe way when you're just growing so fast. And we really live in a culture that, you know, promotes growth as that is what business success is. And so we've kind of taken a step back and going back to those values of what does business success look like to us, not necessarily what we have been told it needs to be. So we kind of are looking to the future as being really smart about what that growth looks like.
I want to dive deeper in that. And literally the last podcast I did, I touched on this, so I won't go as deep on it, but I had a sales business coach that was basically pitching me on the product and doing kind of a good job, but not listening. And they basically said, you know, this is your revenue A. This is the revenue you want B. Why aren't you getting there? What's stopping you from building all the pain? And what they didn't realize is revenue B isn't what I want per se. Like, I want time, I want education, I want to build branding, I want the right kind of clients. So hitting B, the revenue numbers, which were less important to me than anything, they were looking at revenue, I'm looking at other things. Hitting B, which is a revenue number, isn't what I wanted, because if I were to hit B too quickly, my entire company would crumble because I wouldn't be able to service those clients possible. So double down on, you know, not growing for just sake of growth, and maybe a little bit about what's more important to you guys than, you know, hockey stick growth out of the blue that could be overwhelming. What is a little bit more important than growth for growth's sake?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on a lot of the personal aspects of, you know, time. Where can we only have so much energy in the day? Where do we want to contribute that to? But also is the types of clients that we're bringing on. So we have an opportunity, you know, to really think about who do we enjoy working with. You know, you spend a lot of hours working, you might as well be advertising for brands that you really care about. So that's the kind of the way we look at it. But also, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business. We do need to make money to be able to pay people. So we do track revenue, and we are tracking our margins and making sure that we're running a really healthy business so we can pay our employees good salaries. So it's a blend of all of those things, but there are a million ways to slice and dice what revenue looks like to a company and how they're judging that. And so we just try to make sure that, are we growing at a rate that allows people to have that balance, but also are we able to pay them the salaries that they deserve?
Yeah. I'm happy you brought that up, because that's an important point. With, you have employees, they deserve to get paid. You need to make money to pay them. You can't just be like, you can't just take a 6-month sabbatical for no reason. Okay. Fair enough. I don't even know where I'm going with this. It's fascinating for me, because I'm so agile as a one-person show that I know I and a lot of the listeners appreciate your guys' advice, because you're at a scale where I and a lot of them want to and will be in the future. So I'm wondering, talking about future, what is the vision of where you'll be in 1, 3, 5, 10, 20 years? It's up to you. I mean, where I love that late aid gave the, I don't know, because that's how I feel all the time. I honestly just live day by day. And if I do the right things, then I know that I'll be successful long term, but I don't want to answer for you guys. I'm kind of curious as to where you see yourself going.
Yeah. From the industry standpoint, like, having a 5-year plan is just, it's a little silly. these networks that we've spent most of our careers on, we're just getting started when we started our career. So who knows what's going to be in this space 5 years from now. So it is a little bit day by day there. But it goes back, in terms of building that business, it goes back for me is always, am I proud of what I've built, and really making sure I stay true to myself, and that we continue with employees that really care about the business as well. So that has been a real aspect to our success, is that our employees care just as much about Helen and Gertrude as we do. And we want to be able to continue to employ those types of people and that have that passion for our brand. So that's kind of where I see the future of H&G. However we pivot and grow, it's always going to have that at its core. Is our team proud to say that they work for us?
Yeah. And I would say it goes down to, as well, to the pillars of what are important to us, right? Are our employees treated well? Are our clients work that excites us? You know, are we balanced? Are Becca and I dying? Like, that's not what we want, right? So although we can't sit here and tell you, no, I want 10 times growth in the next 5 years, or I want X employees, we really just want it to be healthy and harmonious, which is a big statement when you're running such a volatile business and an agency, volatile in terms of agency marketing the world, but it's the things we can control.
I love that. And it's such a nuanced point. So, like, you want to be healthy, you want employees that care and are proud to say they work for you, that's going to stand the test of time, right? That has nothing to do with numbers, but it has everything to do with numbers at the same time, right? It's crazy to think about.
Yeah. And I will say too, so a lot of what we do, or at least what I very, very strongly believe coming from a big corporation, is accountability. I think accountability is key to your success, because when you have employees that are accountable for their work and you respect them for it, then they'll turn around good work for you. So it's really creating an environment in which, yes, we have high expectations, but you get the fruit of your labor. So therefore, if we can create this relationship, then it's right. And it's not for everybody, but it works in what it is that we're doing right now.
I love it. In a moment, we're going to go to the rapid fire round. First, to bridge between, wow, first off, incredible insight. I really appreciate you guys being here. I want to bridge into just having fun and closing out by getting to know Becca and Leyde a little bit better. And I want to start just with Rochester and Western New York as a whole. What do you guys do for fun? Obviously, you work a lot, but obviously, you have lives outside of work. Other than hiking Kilimanjaro, what are some of the things we might find you doing on the weekend?
I have 1 million different hobbies. I feel like it's how it keeps my creative side going. I'm very much right now into interior design. So I'm constantly redoing things in my house, learning drywall, how to put floors in. I also grew up on a farm. So I'm usually always putzing around in the garden the minute it gets warm out. So that's their kind of my main focuses right now outside of work.
Yeah, I have two very energetic little boys. So we're usually at a playground or a field or biking the canal just to tire them out, to be honest.
So rapid fire round, short, sweet, either or fill in the blank questions. I'm not sure how we're going to do this because there's three of us, but I think we'll just rock and roll and you guys can buzz in, or you can kind of just take turns answering, but we'll have a little bit of fun. Again, it's either or, but fill in the blank. If you don't like any, the answers are completely subjective, for whatever you want to give us. So I often start off with coffee or tea.
Coffee.
Two for coffee. Beer or wine?
Wine.
Wine.
What about furry animals? Cats, dogs, or fill in the blank?
I've got two fluffy dogs.
I'm super allergic to both.
Oh, no. Fish.
Plants.
Favorite time of year, like a favorite season?
Early spring, early fall.
Summer.
Both good ones. Okay, so take business out of it. Say favorite social media platform just to spend time like yourself, like take business out of it.
Pinterest.
Pinterest. It's the best place to instigate.
iOS or Android?
iOS.
Same.
Two for iOS. Favorite ice cream flavor? Let's do that one.
Anything hedonist but cookies and cream.
Ben and Jerry's Chubby Hubby. It's pretty good.
Both really good. And both from the Northeast as well. So, okay. So this is a new one I've been doing. Favorite fictional character. So if you could maybe have lunch or coffee or with a fictional character, who would you choose?
Well, you stumped me.
Yeah. I'm blanking.
Let's do fictional, non-fictional, live or dead dinner party. There's two of you and you get to only select three people to join you. So I'll let you guys kind of deliberate, but you're having a dinner party with three people, live or dead, fiction or non-fictional. Who would you bring to the table just to hang out and have a great night?
Shakira. She's my girl.
I'm always going to choose Taylor Swift.
I'll give you two more. I said three. I'll give you two more.
Oh, two more for our dinner party?
Yeah, I said three total, but you gave me two. I'm going to give you four. Honestly, no rules. Give me as many as you'd like.
I like Frida Kahlo. I feel like she'd be pretty interesting.
I would say also AOC would be awesome to speak with.
Being awesome. Talk about a bunch of disruptors, a bunch of women disruptors that kick butt, entertainment and intelligence. across the board. Cool.
It's gonna be a fun dinner.
What else should I ask you guys? I'll do one more. What are you learning right now? Like, what's exciting you? What's new and exciting? Learning? What are you looking forward to today?
Yeah, from my side. So one of the things that we've set out to do from the start of Helen and Gertrude is to go after our B Corp certification. So now that we have a few years under our belt, we are actually going through that process now, which has been really interesting just to see some of the factors that they judge businesses on and what kind of things that we need to adjust and change to get that certification.
Yeah. And then on the other side, I've been pretty deep in different offerings. So learning about Doximity or Web3 NFTs, that's been a whirlwind, and it's interesting, exciting to see something coming. Obviously a lot still needs to be figured out, but I think it's inevitable. So we're going to have to learn about it, whether we like it or not.
It's happening, right? It's definitely happening.
Yep.
Cool. How do people get in touch with H&G? How do people get in touch with you? Well, what should their next step be?
Yeah, you can find both of us on LinkedIn and all the major social networks, but also info@hg.agency. It'll go to both of us.
Cool. I'll put that in the show notes as well. So that is in the notes, guys. Is there a perfect client? So if someone's listening and they aren't part of a large firm, can you assist them? Or is that more of like a mentorship, friendship situation? Who is the perfect client for you?
Feel free to reach out if you're curious. We typically do work at a slightly larger scale to be able to be effective, but right. We can talk about minimum strategy. And if not, we can definitely point you in the right direction. We have a really large network of partners that work at different scales and different specialties. So it's not a one size fits all.
Cool. Yeah. And I wanted to clear that out because even if you're small like me, obviously we're on this call. You guys are open to connect. And if you're not a good fit, you just said it, you have teammates and partners that you can push them in the right direction, help them out. This has been tremendously fun. It's been freaking great for me to learn from people doing what I do at a larger scale. So I commend you for that. And I appreciate you guys taking the time. I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Great. Yeah.
Thanks for having us. This is fun.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@balbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.